That little promise, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. And we reminded you that it is mentioned some 7 times in the Scriptures, and we have looked at several of them. For you maybe that are keeping track, I would mention a couple of them that we'll not deal with. Maybe if you have time to go look at them, it would be a blessing. Over in 2 Chronicles, Solomon, after building the temple and getting up from praying the dedicatory prayer for the temple, the Shekinah glory cloud fell, and Solomon stood to his feet and in a loud voice proclaimed, "He will never leave us nor forsake us." And certainly it's a promise worth proclaiming. I tell you, it'd be good tomorrow when you get your gas down at the filling station, tell that old gal, "Did you know that God was with me?" I tell you, they'll look at you like you're crazy. Of course, don't tell them if you don't believe it. Amen. But it is a promise worth proclaiming. And then over in Psalms 27, David is praying there. It's a time of great fear. And David prays that little promise to the Lord, "I'll never leave thee nor forsake me." And in the matter of praying that little promise, he moved from fear to faith. And certainly it's a promise worth praying. Promise worth praying. It's not a bad thing to remind God that He's with you. Acknowledging Him makes you aware that He's there. Amen. But I feel like the Lord would let us tonight look at the last time it's mentioned, if you've got a Bible there. Hebrews chapter number 13. I would much rather look at the other two. But this is the one I feel like God would have us to close out with. Hebrews chapter number 13 and verses 5 and 6. If you'd like to stand, we'll read that little text tonight. "Let your conversation be without covetousness, and be content with such things as you have. For he has said," here's a little promise, the 7th time it's mentioned, "I will never leave thee nor forsake thee," so that we may boldly say, "The Lord is my helper, and I will not fear what man shall do unto me." You may be seated. I'd like to look at this last time tonight that the promise is mentioned. And preach some thoughts tonight that it's a promise worth possessing. Promise worth possessing. I have believed that God was with me and never leave me nor forsake me. Since the early 70s, I've known that in my head. I believe that tonight with all of my heart. I just got one small problem. 99.9% of the time, I don't act like it. Because if I did believe He was with me all the time, I wouldn't say the things I said. I mean, He's there listening. He ain't fooling Him. I wouldn't act like I act sometimes. Or better yet, I wouldn't react like I react sometimes. I mean, He there in the car when them people cut you off and you blowing your horn at them. He ain't told you to blow your horn. If I believe He'll never leave me nor forsake, I just don't act like it most of the time. I know it, but I don't act like it. And there's a promise that He has mentioned here, and it is worth possessing. But I find in my own life, I won't testify for you tonight, but I find in my own life, it's more words coming out of my mouth than it is living in my life. It's very easy tonight to say, oh yeah, the Lord will never leave me nor forsake me. A horse of a different color to live that all the time. And in the context, he is telling us how we can possess this promise. It become more than just words. It would be our life. Of course, I'm extremely interested because he's done brought up this thing of covetousness and contentment. That's two things Baptists hate for you to preach about, covetousness and contentment. But I'm extremely interested to the crowd he wrote this little book to. This book was written to the saints that were scattered abroad. Rome has fallen. Nero's fixing to play his violin, set the whole city on fire. He blames the Christians for his fall. And saints have been scattered everywhere. Jerusalem has fallen. And one of his favorite things, Nero's favorite things to do is to tar Christians and light them on fire at night. He loves to light them aside the roadside and take his carriage rides. He loves to come by them with a stick while they're burning and lift their chin up, watch their face while they're burning. And that's the crown that Hebrews written to. He said, let your conversation be without covetousness and be content with such things as you have. You know, I was thinking if that crowd was having a problem with covetousness and contentment, Lord God, where does that put you and I at? You wonder if most of us even know God. If it ain't just a religious hoax we're putting on. I'm talking about not just saying this promise. I'm talking about it being our life. We're living it. As we begin to look in the text, if you're going to live this promise. I notice the first thing the text tells us, there will have to be the absence of covetousness. There will have to be the absence of covetousness. He says, let your conversation be without covetousness. Notice in the text, we are confronted with the principle of covetousness. What is covetousness tonight? It is an unholy desire for things. An unholy desire for things. A greed for gain. Wanting that which Providence has not provided for you. You make yourself a little note tonight, you young couples. If you must manipulate and struggle to get it, God didn't give it to you. If He give it to you, He will obligate Himself for the upkeep and the outcome of it. If you manipulate it and struggle to get it, you will be obligated for the upkeep and the outcome of it. I'm talking about the principle of covetousness. More than likely, if you're having to struggle to get it, you're having to manipulate to buy it, more than likely God didn't give it to you. God didn't give it to you. A desire for more. I didn't know if any of you realize this or not. If you've never realized, there's a conspiracy across the world to pump a philosophy into us on the billboards everywhere you look. And I'm sorry to say that there has been occasion where I bought in. And it's the philosophy that more is better. I'm here to tell you tonight, it's a lie out of hell. Less is better. The more things you got, more possibility to break down. The more things you got to dust and clean and vacuum, once you reach 60 years old, you'll hate them. You don't feel like vacuuming or dusting nothing. You listening to me tonight? Yeah. It's going to be more than just words to me. I'm going to have to deal with covetousness. You say, well, I tell you, I just don't feel like I'm a covetous person. I've never known one that did, that was, felt like there was. You listening to me? Desire for more. More is better. Not only do I see in this text the principle of covetousness, but I see the place of covetousness. He said, let your conversation be without covetousness. The little word conversation in the Scripture is not one's talk. It's always one's walk. And it is always one's public perception, how you're perceived. He says the place of covetousness that you'll deal with, you'll have to deal with the public perception of you. Do you look like in your life teach that more is better? Does your life amplify and magnify? Less is better. Less is better. He said, let your conversation, let your walk be without covetousness. Several years ago, I heard a preacher, and he made a statement about this promise here, if we're going to live this promise. And I had to take a double take on his statement. Had to think about it. He said, if you're going to enter in and live this promise, you must live in a post-war mentality. I said to myself, what? Huh? A what? Post-war mentality. I was talking to my daddy one time before he died about what in the world is a post-war mentality? He said, well, after the war, during the Depression, he said, didn't nobody have nothing. Your desire tonight, if you're going to live this promise, must be to lessen what you've got, not to get more of what you've got, if you're going to lay hold of this promise. I assure you tonight, don't get warm and fuzzy on me. Oh, man, that's what I'm going to do. That's what we're going to do, and I'm mad. We're going to start doing that. You might get that idea, but you better hope they get that idea. Going to be hell at that house if they don't. Huh? If you got that idea and you feel like they didn't get that idea, you keep that idea to yourself for a while. They ain't going to like that you got that idea. You listening to me tonight? How is it tonight that I'll be able to come to a place of believing that less is better? I don't know if I've ever shared this with you, and if I have tonight, I'm glad I'm going to share it with you again, because repetition aids learning. There must be a three-prong connection in your life. If these three prongs have not connected, there'll be no power. And you'll never come to a place in your life where you'll desire less instead of more. Just real quick, I'm not going to take long. We're talking about the place of covetousness. We want our walk, our manner of life, the public projection of our life to magnify that I believe that less is better. Because it will be a magnification that He's with me. Now, how can that be? There must be a three-pronged connection. I'm just going to give you these quickly. If you want to look at them, that'll be fine. If you want to jot them down, look at them later, that'll be fine too. One of them is in Mark's Gospel, chapter number 8. Excuse me, John chapter 6. I want to look at that one first. John chapter number 6. Then we'll go to Mark. Three of them. I'm just going to just throw them out there. You do with them what you want. But you got to make these three-pronged connections. If you don't make these three-pronged connections, you'll never ever, I don't care what you do, you can whine, cry all you want to, you'll never come to a place of believing that less is better. You'll live your whole life trying to get more. Try to get more, 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 more. You'll work yourself to death trying to get some more. John chapter number 6, verse number 37. All that the Father giveth me shall come to me. First prong of the connection. There must be a time when you came to God. You must have an experience where you came to God. And of course, most people will say, whoop, that is, preacher. That was my part in salvation. I came to God. Better read the rest of it. All that the Father giveth me shall come to me, and him that cometh to me and I will in no wise cast out. The only reason you came to him is because the Father gave you to the Son. The only reason you came. When was the transaction? There was some kind of transaction between God the Father and God the Son. God the Father gave God the Son a gift. When did he do that? Paul said in Ephesians chapter 1, verse number 4, he did it for the foundation of the world. The Father gave the Son a people. And he said, every one of them, none of them will be in hell. He said, all of them will come to me. But you've got to have a time when you came to God. You've got to make that connection. Now watch the text. Have you got it? Mark's Gospel, chapter number 8. Three-pronged connection. You'll never come to the place where you believe less is better till you make all three prongs of this connection. Mark's Gospel, chapter number 8, verse number 34. Mark's Gospel, chapter number 8, verse number 34. And when he had called the people unto him, with his disciples also, he said unto them, whosoever will come after me. Not a coming to him, coming after. Big difference. I don't doubt many of you here tonight have come to God. But most of the time there will only be a handful you're going to come after him. What you got to do, come after him, preacher? Oh, he'll tell you. Look at the text. He said, let him deny himself. That is, less is better if you say no to yourself. And take up his cross and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it. Whosoever shall lose his life for my sake and the gospel the same shall be saved. Must be self-denial. You're going to come after God. That's the second connection and prong. Third connection. You got your Bible there? Galatians. Chapter number 2. You got to come to him. You got to come after him. Here's the second connect. The third connection. Galatians. Chapter number 2. Ooh, preacher, I'm feeling warm and fuzzy all over. That's what I'm going to go home. Man, I'm going to stop this covetousness. I'm going to stop collecting junk. And I just got a warm all in my heart. I tell you, you're fixing crosswire yourself. Yeah, you made three-pronged connection. Come to him, come after him. Here's the third one, Galatians chapter 2, verse number 20. I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live. Here it is, right here, these three words. Yet, not I. Yet, not I. Yet, not I. If you're going to make the third part of the prong connection, not only you got to come to him, you got to come after him, but you must develop a not me mentality. It's not about me. It's about him. It's always been about him. I don't want to alarm any of you because I know this is going to upset some of you because you've really been thinking that the world revolved around you. There ain't nothing in this world revolving around you. It's all revolving around him. Not I mentality. Oh, if you're going to project now to the world and tell the world that I'm living in a mentality that less is better, it must be a coming to him, coming after him, and a not I mentality. There must be that absence of covetousness. I was wondering tonight, you that claim that God's with you, claim to be on your way to heaven, you ever dealt with covetousness in your life? An unholy desire for things. More. Tell you what tonight, even in its smallest form, you better get rid of it. It's taking his place. You still with me tonight? Second of all, we're back in Hebrews now, back in our text. Promise worth possessing. Boy, preacher, I'd really like to have that promise be more than just words. I'd like to live that thing. I'd like for it to be in my life, my actions. How can I do that? First of all, it must be the absence of covetousness. Second of all, if you've gotten the text there, Hebrews chapter number 13, verse number 5, there must be the activity of contentment. the activity of contentment. We're living in the most discontented society we've ever lived in. Black hairs want to be blonde-headed. Skinny people want to be fat. Fat people want to be skinny. Tall people want to be short. Short people want to be tall. On and on. I read a Gallup poll not long ago. It scared me. 75% of Americans go to work every day to a job they don't like. 75%. There's a possibility tonight 75% of you work a job you don't like. That's scary. I don't know about you. I think a bunch of them's into fast food. Huh? Yeah. Like a lot of people in fast food work don't like their job. You just reek out of them. I was thinking about it. I might have told this story. If I did, please forgive me. I was telling it again because I wanted to hear it. My brother, for years, he holds positive thinking seminars all across the world. And he gets paid $5,000 a day for speaking. I never have been able to say it quite like that, but that's his going price. But some time ago, him and I was down in the Tampa, Florida area, down there close to where my daddy and mama lives, and we had gone in a Kentucky Fried Chicken. And I'm not very vocal if I'm outside the pulpit. I'm vocal in the pulpit, but I won't say nothing too much to people. But there's this old gal in there. I mean, when she come up the counter, you just reek out of her. You could tell she didn't want to like being there. I wouldn't have said anything to her. But my brother, he asked, he said, "Do you like your job?" I mean, she didn't stand there like she prayed or nothing. I mean, just immediately, no. I'd have left it there. I wouldn't have gone no further. Not him. Oh, no, he got to go further. He told her, he said, "Well, how about going in the back finding somebody likes to be here to get our chicken?" You know what she told me? She said, "There ain't nobody that wants to be here. And we going to eat the chicken." Oh, we laugh at the girl at Kentucky Fried Chicken. But how many of us are discontented tonight? I was in a Baptist church the other night, and I come in, old boy was fooling with the thermostat, trying to get it right. I said, "You got one of them thermostats that make everybody happy?" I thought he was going to fall down laughing. Ain't no way you could get everybody in a Baptist church content. Discontent. I notice in our text tonight there's the things of contentment. He said, "Let your conversation be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have." The little word contentment tonight there means to be satisfied. It means to raise a barrier around what you have. Literally, the word means to encircle, put a circle around what you got right now, and say, "That's enough. That's enough. We ain't getting no more." Whoa. Content. He says, "And be content with such things." Ain't that usually what messes you up, some things? Hey, when you have a breakdown, isn't it usually some thing that breaks down? Ain't you always having to take your things somewhere and get them worked on? You know, I was thinking tonight, don't get mad at me now. I was thinking tonight, just this little group here. If we was to go to the house tonight and just collect all the things, all the treasures, and all the toys that we hadn't touched in a long time, and sold them, and brought the money here and laid it at the altar Sunday, Lord God, ain't no telling what we could do. Now, I know some of you sitting there shaking your head. Well, that's a good idea, preacher, but you ain't getting me to do it. Because I love my stuff. I love my things.
Yes, sir.
He said, you'll never be able to really get your arms around this promise. It'll always just be words. It'll never be real truth that lives. I notice not only there's the things of contentment, but I notice there's the tense of contentment. He said, let your conversation be without covetousness, and be content with such things as ye have. As ye have. That little tense in the present tense, right now. He said, right now, whatever you got right now, stop. Don't go no further. Put a circle around it and say, we've got enough. We ain't getting no more to upkeep and take care of. You remember that Psalm 23? The Lord is my shepherd. Anybody remember what the next words are? I shall not what? I shall not what? Won't. God said if you're going to enter in to this promise, it be more than just words. He said you're going to have to ask me to cut your want off. I'll be honest with you tonight. Most of the time, I don't want my want to cut off. I like it. Huh? You'll never hold yourself around this promise tonight till you ask God to cut your want off. Draw the line. I'm satisfied. I'm placing a barrier around what we've got. Not collecting any more. We've got enough. Sufficient. Christ is all I need. As the old reformer said, he said, I never knew that Christ was all I needed until Christ was all I had. Not only is there the absence of covetousness we got to deal with, we're going to get it. This be more than just words. Got to be the activity of contentment. But I notice in the text there'll be the announcement of comfort. Once we deal with covetousness in our life, once we enter into a life of contentment with what we've got right now, and we don't want anything else but Him, then there will be an announcement of comfort. Watch this text now. He said, let your conversation be without covetousness, be content with such things as you have, for He hath said. There'll be a word of comfort. Be a word of comfort. It'll be personal. It'll be practical. It'll be precise. It'll be powerful. And it'll be with purpose. Hey, it's awful deep. I don't know if you can get it or not. It's hard to hear Him when you got your hands full. All your little stuff, you know. You're busy. We're busy. Preacher, I really would like to have come every night of the meeting, but we just had so many things going on. You listening to me tonight? It's the announcement of comfort. There's a word of comfort. He'll speak personally, practically, precisely, speak with purpose. But I notice the text, don't miss this. Oh, it's so good. I hate to even show it to you. There'll be the will of comfort. For He has said, what did He say? Once I deal with covetousness, I enter into contentment. I don't want anything else. Then He'll say to you, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. I see in this little phrase here the will of comfort. He says, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. I didn't know if you noted or not, but there are seven statements in the New Testament, I will statements. This statement is a part of His last will and testament. One of the things that you get by means of inheritance, because you're one of His children, seven statements, this is one of them. I will. He put it in His last will and testament. He wrote it in His last will and testament.
I will never leave everybody. No, 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 no.
It's those that deal with covetousness come content. He said, I'll never leave them nor forsake them. I got to thinking about that last will and testament. In order for a will to be enacted, this is his last will and statement now. Last, only way a will can be enacted is that there must be the death of the testator. See, if you write down what you want to be done with your things when you die, you need to make it real clear. Write it down exactly. Who you want to get your junk, your stuff when you die. And then you can't be sure they'll get it. Unless you got you a good power of attorney. Now, what's the power of attorney going to do? Well, he's going to make sure that the will is enacted just like it was written. Well, Jesus left a last will and testament, seven statements in him. One of them is, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. He died on an old rugged cross that enacted the will. But he wanted to make sure the thing was carried out just like he wrote it. He needed a power of attorney. He couldn't trust nobody, so he raised himself from the dead and became the power of attorney of his own last will and testament. I love the hound out of that, don't you? He said, I've raised myself from the dead, and he says, I'm guaranteeing you, I will never leave you nor forsake you. I was extremely interested in that will. He says, I will never. That is an emphatic double negative there, that little word never. No, no, not at all. No way, Jose. I love that, don't you? He says, I will never leave you. That little old word there, leave you, means to send away or to desert. It has the idea of leaving a one alone or loosening the grip on one. Did you know God said, I've got a grip on you tonight and I'm never going to open my hand? Whoa. Well, stop right there and have a shout break. Huh? Said, I'll never loosen the grip on you. He said, I'll never leave you. He says, I'll never forsake you. That little word forsake means to fail, to renew, to be dedicated to infuse with strength for the journey, to give help or aid. He said, I'll never leave you in a set of undesirable circumstances and not help you. He said, if you'll deal with covetousness, be content. He said, I guarantee you. He said, I'll never leave you nor forsake you. Not only do I see the absence of covetousness, it must be the activity of contentment. It'll be the announcement of comfort. Watch verse number 6, and I'm done. It will be the amazement of confidence. The amazement of confidence. I notice in verse number 6, there'll be a bold source of confidence. He says, so that we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper. Bold source of confidence. Says we can boldly say. That little phrase, boldly say, means to exercise great confidence, great joy, with great cheer, with the chin up. I know one thing. The Lord is my helper. I want that to be more than just words. I want it to be lived out in my actions. Huh? I was thinking about old Mel Trotter's wife. Mel Trotter and his wife years ago was down off the coast of North Carolina. They'd rented them a little cabin down there. Mel Trotter was out walking one morning. They say they believe he tripped and fell in the surf, fell face over in the surf. She got down there to him. The EMTs were working on him. They were doing CPR on him. They couldn't get no vital signs on him. One of the EMTs asked her, said, "Is this your husband?" And she said, "Yes, sir, it is." He said, "He's dead." He said, "She got a smile on her face." Said, "Oh, EMT thought maybe she didn't hear him." He got louder. He said, "Ma'am, your husband dead." He said, "The smile got bigger on her face." He thought maybe she's in shock. He thought he'd get real loud on her. He says, "Ma'am, I don't know if you heard me or not. Your husband dead." She said, "I heard you the first time." He said, "How come you got a smile on your face?" I loved the hound out of what she told him. She said, "My God's in heaven and he has done as he pleased." I'm not talking about down there on the coast where your husband just died and you scream, "Oh my God! Oh my God! What am I going to do?" Oh no, I'm talking about living. It'd be more than just mouth around the church house. I'm talking about living. I know one thing, God's with me. My God's in heaven, and he's just done as he pleased. I'm talking about bold source of confidence. It says in our text, the Lord, Adonai, Master, one who is a slave tonight. You're looking at an old boy tonight who is a slave to God, and I don't have no chains on me. He ain't got to come by tonight and check on me. I'm going to be a slave come morning. No matter what happens tonight, I'll still be a slave to the Master. The Lord is, present tense right now, my personal possession. One who, the little word help is one who succors, one who takes care of all the maintenance of my needs. And the little phrase here, "the Lord is my helper," the little root of it is to shout it with a loud voice. I don't mumble it. I tell you, the Lord is my helper. No! The Lord is my helper! Say it with a loud voice. Boldly say it. Or you'll mumble it around if you ain't dealt with covetousness and contentment. "Oh yeah, the Lord is my helper." Oh no, you get excited about it if you've dealt with covetousness and contentment. Bold source of confidence. But I notice in our text there's a blessed statement of confidence. He says, "So that we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, and I will not fear what man shall do unto me." What man shall do unto me. Ain't nobody going to do nothing to me unless God wanted to. The Book of Man want God to get me? If God want the Book of Man to get me, the Book of Man going to get me. They don't stop him. I tell you, you're looking at one old boy scared to death of his shadow. You know, old Nike had that commercial years ago with that little check, "No fear, no fear." I saw a boy up in Lenore, North Carolina, old redneck boy with a truck. He had the redneck version on the back of that truck window, Nike, "No fear." He had it on the back of that truck. Ain't scared of nothing. Ain't scared of nothing. I told my wife, I said, "I bet you say boot to him, it'll take you a week to find him." I don't know. I'm more like the little old boy that was in the church program. He didn't have but one little old thing he had to say. Step out on the stage and say, "Fear not, it is I." That's all he had to do. And he practiced and practiced. And mama went over and over. "Fear not, it is I." Man, he had that thing down so good. Say that thing so good and loud everybody could hear him. Boy, the night of the program, man, it was packed. He stepped out on that stage. He saw that big old crowd. He cried out, "It's me and I'm scared to death." But I have found most of the time when I'm scared and fearful, it's because I hadn't dealt with covetousness. I really do think I'm important. And I really do think if the boogeyman was to get me, it would be a bad thing. You listening to me? Fear. He said, you'll not fear what man can do unto you. I love what the old saint of God, she's going in a house one night. Old boy met her at the door. Stuck a gun up in her ribs. He said, give me all your money, I'm going to kill you. She looked over her shoulder. She told the old boy, she said, don't scare me with heaven. How you going to mess with somebody like that? You kill them, you're doing them a favor. I came across this little old statement. Charles Haddon Spurgeon made this statement 200 years ago. He said, a brave man is not one who is scared of nothing. He is one who each time he is afraid, he runs to God as his refuge. Yes, I bless God, I ain't scared of nothing. You ain't no brave man. Ain't no bravery to you. Brave man does get scared. Every time he does, runs to God as his refuge. Alexander Pindon, the great reformer of 1682, was out visiting one day one of his poor widow ladies, a parishioner. Her husband had been killed the week before by some enemy soldiers that come and ransacked her house. She said, preacher, she said, while they were ransacking the house, she said, one of the soldiers told me after they killed my husband, he said, we'll not leave thee nothing either to put in thee or on thee. Well, Alexander Pindon, he said, Cicely, he said, what did you say to him? She said, preacher, she said, I told him, I fear thee not. She said, I will not want as long as there's a God in heaven. I love that, don't you? See, that's more than just verbalizing. The Lord is with me. Oh, what a promise tonight worth possessing. Friend, is it your promise tonight? I was wondering tonight if you'd have the guts to let those words come out of your mouth. He'll never leave me. He'll never forsake me. I was wondering tonight, even if you had the guts to let that come out of your mouth, I wonder if there's something inside of you saying, huh? What? What did your mouth say? You sure don't act like it. You sure don't live like He's with you. He'll never leave you nor forsake you. I want it to be more than just words out of my mouth. I want it to become the actions of my life. It's a promise worth possessing. Would you stand with us tonight?